Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is a 4-day dad week.
No, 3-day dad week. 4-day last week, 4-day next week, 3-day this week. 4-day mom week this week.
But that's not fair.
To whom?
To anyone.
It's just a card, Bugnuts.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 552. My name is Scott Johnson, and I'm joined today by Brian. He likes to hide in the dumbwaiter when his brother is a Dick Dunaway.
Yeah, duh. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Okay, whose turn is it? Oh, yes, mine.
Yeah.
Attention, movie adventurers. Film Sack awaits. Do you have what it takes to navigate the many worlds of shitty streaming services? It's not for the faint of heart. For once you embark upon your journey, there's no turning back until Film Sack's reached. In fact, I reach Film Sack at least once a week myself. It's healthy. The school nurse says it's natural. And finally, viewers shake their heads to reset at the end of each movie. Puke. Then stream again and again for different crappy adventures. Zorgons, take me away. Now somebody press play on my bathroom Sony boombox with the makeup residue caked an inch deep. Because we're about to launch this podcast into outer space and do our best to avoid Dax Shepard. Too late. Take a race of action. Emergency. Emergency. Anywho, has anyone seen my cryogenically frozen Twilight Princess Kristen Stewart? It's my 4-day week to take her home, you know, to toss the balls around in the front yard. You bunch of weirdos. Wait, did I just win Film Sack? Randy? Do you think I still have beautiful eyes?
You called her the Twilight Princess, like the Zelda
She's
name.
She's a Twilight Princess, Kristen Stewart.
That's really good. Twilight Princess. Very funny. All right. With us also, Randy, his robot is a grower, not a shower, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian. And thank you all, everyone here. Thank you for coming out to the Poughkeepsie Garden Inn and Suites Conference Center on a Monday afternoon to hear my presentation and get signed copies of my new book, How to Clean Supernatural Devices Out of Your New House's Basement. Part 2. You're going to avoid common pitfalls associated with supernatural portals, poltergeists, and space-time transportation devices, as long as you follow my 3 easy rules. Number 1. Do you see a game or a book with a strange, wondrous title that you've never heard of before? Despite the fact that your profession is literally associated with books and games, that's your magic mayhem source right there. Right there. If you got a unique, never-before-seen title on the outside, that equals bad idea. Don't forget to put on gloves before you even touch it. Number 2, you can't destroy these things. So why bother? Just put it in the neighbor's trash and let nature take its course. Some homeless fellow will go on an adventure, and you can focus on your teenage daughter hating you, Dad. Ugh, parents are the worst. Number 3. Make sure you do all of this as soon as possible after you buy an old house. If you don't toss the supernatural objects before your kids get to them, you'll regret it. Only you won't regret it because everything will always work out in the end. Aww.
It sure does. That was a long ah. Yeah, it was a really long ah. Wow.
All right.
Well, on that note, with us finally, Brian, don't push that button. Ibbit.
Captain's log. I'm going to try and do Dax Shepard's voice for this whole damn thing. May 3rd, 2005. I've finally been returned to my ship after being stranded out here again, getting pulled through a time sphincter and being rescued by the Bicker brothers. After a heated battle with the Zorgons and a deprogrammed robot, they were finally able to reunite me with my long-lost brother and return me to my ship. Captain's log, May 14th, 2005. Commit to the bit. I accidentally flew out of an airlock on my ship and ended up stranded on a planet where the inhabitants tried to perform an alien autopsy on me. It's all a little hazy, but what I remember was I was strapped to a table where three of these little monsters tried to remove and analyze my internal organs. Fortunately, just as they were trying to extract my funny bone, they realized that nobody checked the stupid D batteries in the bottom of the table, and I was freed and allowed to go home since there were no more in the house and the CVS was closed.
Because it's operation.
That's exactly. Very good. You see where I'm going with this. Yeah. Captain's log, May 20th, 2005. I'm starting to develop a bad reputation among the crew. This time, it started with me winning second place in a beauty contest. As I was trying to collect my $10, I rolled doubles three times and ended up on a jail planet where I had to wait four turns and pay $50 to escape. I don't know why I had to sign up for service on the USS Milton Bradley. Oh, crap. I think I hear a twister coming.
I like your extended universe.
Yeah. I also like your I like your slightly Jesse Ventura take on Dak Shepard.
Yeah. You kept falling in and out of that too.
Yeah.
Well,
I kind of did. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
It's all right. You committed to the bit, and I appreciate it when people do that.
Just call every, if you just finish every sentence with Bud, you could have been Canadian.
That's right, Bud.
Yeah. Hey, Bud. What's Bud. Going on? Sorry. Check this out. It's Zathura, everybody. Now, I've kind of already had it with people online who keep saying, oh, that's the Jumanji in space movie. Yeah. Okay, fine. They're both about, you know, supernatural board games and stuff that happens
it's
when you mess with them
the
and all
same
that.
Same original children's book writer story. I mean, it's so, yeah, yeah, it's fine.
It's just an old story, whatever. But I am here to tell you, Zathura is a vastly superior movie to that original Jumanji movie. Now, I'm not talking about those new ones with The Rock, okay? Forget those exist for a second. They're kind of separate anyway. But Zathura, you put Zathura and the original Jumanji on a table, I'm taking Zathura every time.
Yeah.
Every time.
Wow. I would argue this is a better movie than all the Jumanjis, even the new ones. Even though I find the new Jumanjis hilarious, they really don't have to be board games.
Mm.
Or video games. Or whatever they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen those new ones, so I can't.
Zathura is the best one of a board game I have seen. Yeah. It's fantastic.
And I'll say it right out front so it's out of the way and we can argue about it if we want to, but I think this not only holds up, I think it's still very charming. I think these kid actors are great and I think they sell it real well and I think it shows off Favreau's directing chops like he often does. Mm-hmm. And I think this holds up. If I was 10 years old when this came out, I would consider this like E.T. levels of important in my life. Mm. Like, it's that kind of movie. At least that's the impression I came away with.
Like, mm.
Yeah, I got a real concerned out of Randy over there. So, like, Randy, just tell me, did you not feel the love here? You know, like the...
No, this was a terrible movie. I totally understand why it's 51% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, it's exactly half of a good movie. Like, it has exactly 50% of the elements that I was looking for, of the things like I really, really wanted. Mm-hmm. But, this may have something to do with the fact that I sat and watched it with a 12-year-old who also didn't like it and made fun of it the entire
time. Really?
I can understand why Jon Favreau this was like a huge letdown. Like, I can understand why it didn't make its budget, considered a box office bomb and so on. But like at the same time, we're halfway there. Like you said, to get some good actors doing a good job. And like, it looks like the look and feel of the movie is amazing. Like, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
If it had just had a good script, it would have been really something.
Okay.
Oh, I feel like this movie doesn't strive for a lot and it hits it perfectly, right? Like, it doesn't try to be anything more than what it is. And I think that is to its credit. It doesn't try to be, you know, like it, a simple, you know, better love your little brother kind of thing, right?
For, yeah, the whole allegory is like, how important is are your familial relationships? It's a brother's it's a brother's salvation story. And then they make this simple kind of, you know, that premise, the core of it. And I think it works. I'd forgotten the big reveal at the end. I totally forgot about that Dax Shepard bit. And
that was terrible, by the way. Like, that was like, as it was going. So there's
what
a
happened
couple
to
of,
your heart, Randy?
Heartless.
What happened to it? What happened was, watch this movie for the first time. And again, I didn't even hear about it. Like, I was 2005 was like the peak of my going to the movies year. Like I saw like 100 new movies that year, and I'd never heard of this.
Yeah,
but I understand. Again, I understand why. Like I say, it was a box office bomb because it just doesn't have like the things that you might watch a movie like this for. So like, it's getting started, and I'm like, oh, okay, all right. I know it's going to be a little tropey, but we're going to have a kids are disconnected from their divorced dad story, and they're going to come back together with dad. Nope. Dad is sidelined for the whole movie. Dad's not even.
Tim Robbins. We don't need Tim Robbins.
You thought that was the last time you saw Andy Dufresne? He was out of there.
Yeah. Like, it's okay. All right. But like, I spent a lot of the movie waiting for that, you know, and it wasn't even close. Dad's a non-factor, right? I'm like, okay, but that's all right, because like Jingle All the Way and things like are also bad. Like, it's a terrible trope to have.
If we're putting this in the same category as Jingle All the Way, you and I are going to have to take this outside, because that movie's bad, bad, bad. And this, for the record, people who went to Rotten Tomatoes, the tomato meter for this movie is 76, certified fresh. The audience score is at 51. Yeah. Johnson,
the person who has said repeatedly on this show that the audience score is the only
The bat again. It's the opposite that I have always said the opposite. It's never been the audience score.
Clips again. Okay.
No, I'm so serious. Anyway. We've had this conversation last time. We proved it. The audience score means nothing. People can gain it. They go in there and they review bomb stuff just because there's a lesbian in a movie. Like, F the audience score. It's worthless. The tomato score is the one I always end up in the averages. And I would put myself right around the mid-70s, 80s for this. Like, this is just right for me. And I'm not saying it's a perfect film. But I will say, like, if you're going to present a relatively simple concept of this brother dynamic, but also let's cover it in this fantasy of going into space and all these things happening, they're speaking directly to a certain kind of audience. Now, why that audience didn't all rush and see this in 05, I don't know, because you're absolutely right about it not making money. It was kind of overlooked, blah, 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 all those things. And it was at the time, I remember people going, oh, it's Jumanji in space. I'm not interested. I remember that being
said. That's exactly the problem for the audience is Jumanji in space.
Yeah.
That was the problem.
It got boiled down to just being a clone of that. Yeah.
And that's really unfortunate, because in a world without Jumanji, I think this stands out even more. And I think, because when I went in 05, I had a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 12-year-old, and they loved it. They freaking loved this movie. And I think that's the target audience. But on the same token, here I am, an adult sitting in that theater, and here I am watching it again. And I still relate to these concepts. I think these kids are not phoning in their performances. They're really good. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, sells a whole lot of this. If these were bad acting kids, we'd be screwed. And I'll even go on a limb here and say that Kristen Stewart puts in one of her better performances in this movie. And I don't mean that as like a low bar. I just mean maybe I do. But what I mean is she's perfectly suited for it. She's not in a ton of it. But what she does have to do is, being this older sister that only cares about hanging out with her friends and boys or whatever, she nails that. And it's in a way where I kind of forget about all the complaints we have about Kristen Stewart's performance normally. Now, I know she's supposed to be amazing in that Princess Diana thing, and I haven't seen it. So I don't want to, you know, I'm not, this is
Twilight
not.
Twilight Princess!
Yeah, this is not me trying
she's
to.
She's Twilight Princess Diana, oh my gosh.
Oh my lord, that's a video game I'd play. But anyway, I don't know what it is. There's some magic to this thing.
I'll say, I didn't know this was going to be a thing, so I haven't really thought about it. But I think, personal opinion, maybe we're a little bit shaded in one direction as opposed to Randy, because we did all have, me, you, and Ibbot, we all had kids of a certain age when Zathura originally came out, and Randy didn't. Randy was just an adult walking around
living that adult
not realizing
life.
That one day he was going to be a father.
Yeah.
Right. So
I mean,
maybe
I really did give it a shot. Like I sat down with a 12-year-old boy and we tried to, you know, we really tried. He didn't have any devices. Like he sat there and watched the whole thing, right, without even looking at a phone.
Yeah.
But and I didn't, what I tried not to do was to just Mystery Science Theater the thing. Like that's a thing that can happen when you're sitting at home with your kid. You can get into this like frame of mind, right, where you're just looking to make fun of it, and that's, I was trying really, really hard not to. But I mean, the movie just has so many little things that it could have done better. Like starting with the name of the movie. The name of the movie is terrible. It's no wonder I didn't notice
it's named after the book.
I know. And that's it's a terrible name. It doesn't draw you into anything. It's just a word, you know, like it's just like a sound. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If it had been called literally anything, it could, like the board game, which is ridiculous and makes no sense, is a little space race between like a couple of spaceships. Mm-hmm. If it had just been called Space Race, like that would have been so much more intriguing.
It is called Zathura Space Zathura. Adventure.
They did subtitle it.
Zathura Space Adventure is the name of the thing, although is the book called? The book is just Zathura. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they probably did that based on, I mean, Randy, you're probably right. They probably said, we got to add a little something there.
It doesn't say enough, even though Jumanji did, whatever.
Yeah,
like one of the things about Elf, and I'm gonna, sorry guys, but you have to.
If you tell me Elf is bad, then I'm gonna.
No, you have to compare this movie to Elf.
Okay,
you cannot not compare this movie to Elf.
Watch me.
It's got so much in common with Elf. It follows Elf immediately. It's the next movie the guy made.
There's no Will Ferrell in here.
And I mean, I'll give you. Okay, hold on. I give you. There's a heartwarming realization at the end about loving one another. I mean, that is really the only comparison I can draw to Elf.
Okay,
that's a fish out of water.
Absolutely, bunch of magic. It's magic driven. Yeah. You're not going to get any sort of like reality based explanation for a lot of the magic. And most importantly, Jon Favreau is aiming at a particular audience with these things. But if Elf is like a 9 out of 10, this is like a 4 out of 10, and like it's. Because there's so many questions that it makes you as a viewer ask, and it has no intention of answering them. You know what I'm saying?
That's
like, Kristen Stewart, like what the, it, I just can't even like, it's like,
you okay, so,
a,
okay.
You can't even form a sentence.
You have a character that is one of the children and you sideline her by literally freezing her solid. And then I'm asking the whole time she's frozen solid, is she dead? Is she going to be okay? And it's like, you haven't established that the magic is good enough to revive her and she's going to be okay. So I just feel like the movie's being mean. And then it literally throws her into a black hole with her screaming. I'm like, oh my God,
this movie
is like, what just happened? And then, no, she's fine. But how? And like everything,
because the board game ended. The brother ended up out there too. So did Walter. He ended up getting sucked into the hole, and then you know.
I got a question for you, Randy, because I need to know, because this feels like very specific complaints about very specific things. What'd you think about The Wizard of Oz? I'm just curious. What did you think about The Wizard of Oz?
We're supposed to believe that this girl traveled 100 miles across
the Wizard. The Wizard of Oz informed my best guess about the movie as I was watching it, and I wrote this down. My best guess was that the movie is playing it straight and based in reality up to the point that Dad leaves and the younger kid hides in the dumbwaiter.
My guess was that
the kid was in the dumbwaiter using his imagination to pass the time.
There you go.
And everything that happens after that is him sort of daydreaming or maybe asleep and dreaming up the whole scenario that follows, right? Yeah.
Right.
That is the Wizard of Oz. She gets knocked out and she dreams this whole thing and then she wakes up. So I spent most of the movie thinking this kid's going to wake up from all this and the dumbwaiter and it's going to be awesome. And no, that doesn't happen.
That's okay though. That means they really experienced it, and they weren't sure at first because he looked at his brother and said, did that really happen? And the brother's like, yeah, we're not talking about this. And then the sister's like, we're not bringing this up ever again. And they made that great joke for how you still think my eyes are beautiful or whatever. And, you know, she's all pissed.
The
best
thing in the movie is her falling for her, like that is so entertaining. Yeah. When she, you're right. She was like her best performance. I was really amazed when she says like, man, I really like that guy. I really like that guy. I'm like, oh, wow. Where's this going?
You guys want to hear something crazy? Kristen Stewart is only 2 years older than Josh Hutcherson that plays the young Walter kid. Really?
Yes.
Yeah. So she's just barely, she's like barely Josh out of puberty and he's just getting in. So
here's my amazing in this movie, especially, she is poor man's Emma Watson. Like, she looks like Emma Watson, acts like Emma Watson. She, like, everything about it is like, wow, they could have just gotten Emma Watson. Did you know Kristen Stewart and Emma Watson were born in the same week?
Oh, weird.
They were born I know the same week. Apart. I knew they were very similar in age. Yes.
1990, she was born. So she is only 4 years older than my daughter. And so this time, trying to think, 05, she would have been 15. 16, something like that.
Right. So. In 05, you got to remember Zathura. Okay, so you were talking about Will not really caring for this movie. And I could totally understand that post the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Sure.
This was 2005, 3 years before Iron Man, before we really started kicking everything off. Very early Favreau. I think this was very... I think this was a good attempt at 2005. And in 2005, when I saw it, I thought it was fantastic. And I watched it again. It still had plenty of magic.
Yeah, I feel like it doesn't do anything it doesn't need to do, right? And I don't feel like a movie should. I don't feel like a movie should be regarded better or worse before or after the what we've gotten recently with the Marvel Cinematic Universe or anything like that. If it held up then, it should hold up now in a post.
Sure.
Thanos world, but
unless you're on this the hard half, right?
Exactly. In my opinion, it does. It I was trying to find fault. I was with you, Randy, where I was really struggling to write things down during this film, and I just have stuff like time sphincter and dog. You're eating all our food. Stuff like that.
That's interesting.
I've
said this before, but for me, the switchover is the change between Gen X and millennials making the entertainment. So like Jon Favreau is 100% Gen X filmmaker. Like he is right in the center of Generation X, right? There's a few filmmakers older than him, a few younger than him. He's right in the middle. Where my kid has grown up on things like Steven Universe, which was made by someone who was born in 1987. That's a completely different take on kids entertainment. Right.
They were all, by 97, you're all internet and you're all connected. So, your life is totally different. No analog.
What I'm saying is like millennial made entertainment for kids is so much more explanatory around emotional intelligence. And so like having seen things like Steven Universe, and I could name dozens of things like Steven Universe that my kid has absorbed, and then going back and seeing a story like this, which is a very Gen X take, right? Latchkey kid. You know what I'm saying? Like the dad literally
Spielberg
leaves.
Influenced.
The old house thing, like there's a bunch of tropes around this old house and the kids are like that is just a very particular way of telling a story that now suddenly seems really, really outdated. It's only 17 years old, this movie, and it just felt really, really outdated.
Only 17 years old. It can almost drive.
I mean, but no, I get it. Or it could drive.
It can.
Yeah, most states it can. But I don't disagree with that necessarily. It's certainly a specific kind of trope, and it came up at a certain time and all of that. But I think there's an appetite for it. There continues to be. The Stranger Things series and its popularity is not that far flung from this. They're even sticking it in the era we most think of as, Gen X coming of age and all of that. And they're telling these fantastical stories through that lens. I think there's plenty of room for that. I don't know that in 05, I still think the Jumanji thing really sticks out, and if we're going to hate the name of Zathura, we're going to hate the name Jumanji. Yes. They're both stupid.
True, correct. Thank you.
They're both dumb names, but, which one really grabbed me? Which one felt like more realistic sort of kids' reactions to a fantastical thing? Zathura 100% for me. Like Jumanji just did not do it for me back in the day or now.
No. Or now. Yeah.
I don't know why.
Well, Jumanji has to be 100% carried by its main star, and he does fine. Like, it's okay, but that's all it's got. You replace Robin Williams with someone else, and
yeah,
no one cares.
Yeah.
No one knows that movie.
Yeah, and those two new ones are, you know, on the backs of hilarious these performances comedies. Of comedy.
I love them as comedy.
I still haven't seen them, so I can never.
We're just a touch of adventure. There's way more comedy in the new ones, which is fantastic, and it does it so well. Yeah. But the adventure to me is not nearly as entertaining as the original Jumanji.
Do you think Zathura could enjoy a revamp like that, or no? Do you think it'd be just compared
I think Zathura is a thing of his time. I don't think you could really. There's really no place to really go with this film.
What do you think?
It's a short story. How many pages in the book? I mean, it's a children's book. There's not a lot of material. Yeah.
But what do you think about could they do it as, and I'm kind of also in the dark with the newer The Rock and Jack Black Jumanji movies, since this is of the same DNA and created by the same author, could they then do this movie, they cross over into the Zathura world.
Right. I could see that.
Guy wrote both those books. And the Polar Express.
Yeah.
He's a big deal.
Jumanji was like 85, and the Zathura was like 2000. It was late. It was much later.
He's got a thing about board games. This guy, he loves the board game.
Yeah, he loves the board games.
Yeah, Chris Van Allsburg.
Now, this guy is a baby boomer, right? And so he had his childhood like in the 50s or 60s. So
50s.
All of this stuff is based on his childhood of playing those stupid tin freaking board games.
Yeah, he was born in 49. He's 72 now, and would definitely, baby boomer 100%.
Right.
But he's got, I didn't realize. Oh, let's see. His art has been, they used his art for covers of C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia when it was republished in 94. So the guy's also an illustrator. He's an interesting dude. I haven't really.
If you love these kind of great illustrative books, short story stuff, he does a great job. And so does, I don't know if you've ever, of course, we probably all have heard or read Bloom County, but Berkeley Breath also has done a lot of children's books, adult children's books.
That was on my film sack bingo card. We got to talk about how you pronounce things.
Berkeley Breath.
Has there ever been a more common name that people argued over how to say it?
Oh, I don't know about common. I don't know any other Breatheds than him. Is that common?
Saying like all through the 80s and 90s and 2000s, every time I came across with, it's like, I was like, hey, have you seen the new Outland by,
I'm not going to say his name.
Berkeley Breathed. Yeah.
Breathed.
It's a weird name that I would have changed at a young age. I would have gone to that courthouse. I would have thrown my $80 at the lady behind the counter, and I would have changed it to Wilson or something.
Be proud of that name.
That's right.
Yeah, whatever.
It's unique.
Whatever. So there's that. So interesting little bit of trivia here. This kid who I was so impressed with in this movie and still am, Jonah Bobo is his name.
The Erasive Action kid,
Erasive Action.
He hasn't done anything since 2014. I don't know what that means. He's 25 now.
He got out of the industry exactly when he should have.
Yeah. Maybe this is good. Yeah, it's probably a good thing. He's so great in this. And kids his age at the time, this is the other funny thing, is during this thing, he lost 7 teeth during the shooting.
Because of his age.
Not because he got in an accident.
Mishaps with the robot.
Because the robot punched him, he lost 7 teeth. He kept losing his teeth. They had to use these things called, I never even heard of these. They're called flippers, but they're basically kids' versions of dentures. And he had to wear these fake teeth so that he could get the scenes
done. Kid in the Stranger Things probably could have used those.
He had some surgery, didn't he? Because his is permanent, I think, or something like that.
It would have been funny if your actor loses teeth to go ahead and write it into the movie.
Yeah.
Go ahead and write it in. Why not?
It could have just been, another tooth fell out. All 7 are falling out during this weird spaceship ordeal.
Did that with Jim Carrey and his Dumb and Dumber chip tooth thing. Yeah.
Yeah, like there's a thing where he throws a baseball and hits Josh Hutcherson right in the face.
Yep.
And I'm like, that could have been an explanation.
Yeah, that's true.
Right there.
And Josh Hutcherson,
actually happens in the... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that Josh Hutcherson dude, who I only knew previous to this from the...
Hunger Games.
I Am Tribute. Yeah, that thing.
Oh, sure. Didn't you ever see Road to Terabithia?
No.
Oh, that was good, too. Oh, cute, I love that movie.
It's a cute film. Yeah. Yeah. Zooey Deschanel. I mean, it touches on some really interesting.
Randy would hate it.
Mental health issues and stuff like that. I know. Because that road to Terabithia is imaginary.
It's all imaginary.
Randy hates imaginary.
So hold on a second. So is he. So he's in that. I don't know what I'm trying to say about him. He's really good in this and perfectly cast as kind of that shitty older brother, yeah. At least initially.
Yeah.
He's really good at it. And there are moments in there where I was like, Favreau's got boys or he had a brother.
Yeah.
These guys know this interaction so well. And these kids are nailing that stuff. They're so good.
Josh Hutcherson has a real tragic look in his soul. Yeah. And it plays really well when you need someone who's kind of looks like they're broken.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of worry about him sometimes. I'm like, oh, I hope he's okay.
even at age 12, he looks that way.
Right.
Yeah.
He's another one who kind of, you know, I feel dodged that that curse that happens to a lot of kid actors, right? Like he was in a lot of stuff in the 2000s and 2010s and stuff. And
he may be more well-adjusted than all of the rest of them. But if you need a tragic-looking actor, I think he was the go-to there. Also, do you guys ever see the Spiderwick Chronicles?
No.
Spiderwick?
Never saw that.
Kind of the same era?
No.
Yeah.
No.
That's also a good one. Like, more magic.
Either was too young for it or too old for it. Yeah. And
sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Time travel and magic, Randy. Stay away.
Those are good.
Emergency.
It's interesting.
Emergency.
It's interesting that you're trying to make that case when I just said I love Elf and Wizard of Oz and so on. Like, I don't know what you're saying.
No, here. I know. I get it. Here's the thing I think might be going on. It's weird to feel this way, though, because normally I'll think of something from my childhood. I go back to, like, Time Bandits, right? And I think of Time Bandits so fondly. I love Time Bandits. It's amazing. That's a great movie. But I won't lie. If I was, like, at the time it was Randy, but anybody, if I was today to watch Time Bandits for the first time ever, I'm not going to have any of those feelings for this thing. Uh-huh. So it's a little weird that I have such fond feelings about a movie that came out when I was 34 years old. Like
we heard a bunch of that last week with the sci-fi animated Heavy Metal We heard a bunch of that from people that were like, hey, I was, you know, 18 when this came out. It really like captured my imagination. I like to draw, whatever. Like we people were telling us this, especially on Twitter.
Yeah.
And like that's a thing that it's something you should really account for, that movies have an intended audience and they have a capturable audience.
Right.
And you could easily be outside of that.
Sure. But in this case, I think maybe what wins it over in the end for me is that they don't play like Pixar as an example. They're respecting that there are some adults in the room. And so the acting needs to be good. And it is. They need to have certain jokes that are a little, you know, like brother calling his brother a dick is not, you know, necessarily kid fair. But it's adults going, yeah, it's totally what my brother would have said, or, you know, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Those things really resonate with me, and they feel like, I don't know, I feel like Favreau does this in almost everything he's ever made. Cowboys and Aliens may be the one exception, a freaking terrible movie. We should watch that here, by the way.
Well, absolutely.
It's on our list.
Yeah.
It's a terrible movie, but it sure is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But again, they're like you're just bringing up that thing where it's like my expectations were being sent one way. The movie starts with a dad struggling to, you know, deal with two differently aged sons. And, you know, and his job and all this stuff, like it's telling a story. Mm-hmm. And then the dad just gets thrown out the window and never has anything to do with the rest of the movie. And it's like, come on, why did you tell me that? And then, you know, like that we suddenly find out, oh, there's actually a third kid. Okay, I'm interested. I'm way more invested in this because this third kid is different than the first two, mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, like in every way. But then she gets sidelined, like she gets literally put on ice. Like I'm like, why is this movie doing this? I'm sitting there asking questions, and I never get answers. Mm-hmm. You know, like I would really like for the game itself, the board game that looks so interesting, to just get some more time, some explanation. Like, how is it? What are these cards coming from? You know,
do
like
you have to shuffle the cards every time you load the game.
And yeah,
there's a, there's sure a certain, the admiral card comes after the captain card.
You can't, if you're a tabletop gamer, you can't go into this movie without parking your brain as far away from that door as possible.
But I wanted that tin, like that. Watching it this time, I want that tin machine, you know, with all the inner workings and the gears and moving the spaceships and knowing how does it know to back up? Would you get, you know, go back three spaces? And,
it's cool. It's a very cool, you know,
only complaint about the design of that thing is that the cards were sideways. I was like, why is the Z on the back of the card printed sideways relative to the words on the other side of the card? That was just like driving me crazy. Dude, they could have, like, any game designer would have told them, no, you don't do it that way. Like,
you got to get the second edition. You get the new edition. They fix it. Yeah. It's, I don't know. What had to have one of those would be neat. I thought, I don't know why I thought this, but I thought this was all based on a real board game, but I guess not. Mm-hmm. It's not a real thing.
It's just that it feels so real.
Okay. Because back then,
it's like one of those things you see in a thrift shop now, right? That, you know, doesn't work and
doesn't work. There's no way any game with that much internal mechanism could ever work more than a couple times.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's pretty nutty. I guess what I'm saying is that if you were going to make a movie about kids that isn't too scary but a little scary, isn't too serious but a little serious, themes are simple but not too simple, I think this movie got it right. I just think they know what they're doing.
I had a good time.
Yeah. I have a good time as well. It was a very good time.
Yeah.
Here's some fun trivia for you. Kristen Stewart admitted she was so disturbed to see the life-size replica made of her face or made of her body.
Yeah. It was frozen. It's actually really good.
Yeah. This is the part that got her, though. The part that freaked her out is not long after the film, several men offered to buy the replica to her and freaked her out.
Yeah. I worried about that.
Yeah.
I hate people.
Yeah, I knew that thing had to end up at somebody's house, and I'm like, they should have destroyed that. Yeah.
Do we even have to? Could we delete a piece of trivia?
Yeah, I just want to know that people. Yeah, exactly. You know, I assume that people do that, and
if we can add something stupid, we should be able to remove it. I would assume. I don't know.
It was again, like, for me, for my money, the best thing in the movie is when she comes to life. When she comes back to life. And she starts interacting with the scenario with, like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's awesome because, like, up to that point, she's literally made of wood. Like, you know, like, they're carrying her up the stairs. I don't know why. I just thought it was so funny and entertaining.
When it fell down the stairs and bumped him in the head and he freaked out, I legit laughed. I thought that was freaking funny. They handled that stuff, I thought, pretty well, considering it's just a big frozen, like, that could have looked like such shit. Like,
it looked like a store mannequin with, and they only shoot it from behind or something like that.
Yeah.
No, they got it right.
Pretty good.
They did. I thought it was her holding still until it fell. I thought, she's just holding really still here. She's got makeup on. Good for them. But then it hits the steps and I'm like, oh man, they made a big, heavy replica of that girl. And that would be a little freaky if I was her, I guess.
And you can buy it on eBay for $12,000.
Oh, God, I hope not.
I have to say, I would not mind having a wooden replica of, like, myself. Of myself.
Oh,
like, yourself, I think it would be really freaking funny to, like, put it somewhere and dress it. And so I think
do you want it to be like Madame Tussauds? Like, is that her name? Is that my saying?
The Wax Museum.
Yeah. Do you want them to be like freaky off like that? You know, like the Uncanny Valley style. Do you want to be really accurate? Like, which do you prefer?
The problem is you've got one expression on that thing forever. That expression is never going to feel right for whatever's going on in your life.
What I love about Madame Tussauds is you walk around and some of the people in there, some of the figures in there are really good. Yeah. And that makes you realize that some of the famous people are themselves more cartoonish than reality.
Yeah.
Like you walk around, you see The Rock at Madame Tussauds, and you're like, oh, wow, I just realized The Rock himself must be made of wax.
He's a big cartoon. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, if they're going to make one of me, here's what I want. I want all the Film Sack hosts, and I want it to be in the flavor of the presidents, the robot presidents in Disney. Just totally off, and just nasty and broken. And
so each one of us takes a turn and suddenly starts talking.
Yeah. We'll raise our hand.
And then Brian Dunaway's starts malfunctioning. He goes,
no, look, I'm like the Highlander. There can only be one.
Oh.
And so any type of, I could never have been a twin. And maybe I was murdered in the womb or something. I don't know. But no, it disturbs me to think that there's another one like me out there. I will kill it. I will destroy it.
A listener on Reddit asked me to pull a clip from last week's episode of you, Dunaway, saying a thing. I'm going to play it right now because you just reminded me of it. And also, I think Gibbet was sort of alluding to this. So check it out. This is what you said last week.
Free love.
Free.
Oh, there you go. Free. I'm free love. See, that's the thing. See, yeah. if you make a replica of me, it will destroy the world. Yeah. Yeah. I have to end
it. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. I totally, fully understand. Okay, have you heard of the, so there's a curse, not a curse, but there's a thing with this movie called curse. The Julianne Moore rule. And here's what it is. Josh Hutcherson, Jonah Bobo, and Kristen Stewart would all end up starring in films in which Julianne Moore would play their mother. For Hutcherson, it was in The Kids Are All Right in 2010. For Bobo, it was in Crazy Stupid Love in 2011. And for Stewart, it was Still Alice in 2014.
Oh, I was wondering what was for Kristen Stewart.
Julianne Moore getting around, man. You know, here's what's the problem. The only time, if you say Julianne Moore to me, here's immediately what I think of.
Oh, I get it. I can finish that sentence for you. Yeah. You're thinking bottomless Grand Canyon.
You're right about the director, different movie.
It's different. It's Altman. No, it's Shortcuts.
Shortcuts. There you go.
Yeah.
She's walking around with no pants on and Shortcuts as if she's not, just talking away like it's nothing. And didn't she do something similar in The Big Lebowski? Like she had.
She did. She was suspended from a chain and making art. Like
making art with her nakedness.
Down. Yeah, exactly.
That's what's funny is you haven't named the movie where she walks around in underwear the most, Boogie Nights.
Oh, sure. Boogie Nights, sure. Yeah. Well, that one you expect everybody to walk around like that. But in the case of, like, in Shortcuts, I just remember going, dude, you don't even know you don't have pants on.
Donald Ducking. Yeah.
Yeah, you're total Donald Ducking. Oh, man. So yeah, she's a good mom to all these three kids is the point. And
which reminds me of a trope.
No, you got a trope, do you?
For Zathura. Yeah, we got a mother around here somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a mother. Like, this is probably the best example I've ever seen of we've got a mother around here somewhere. She's named. All the cast know that she exists and where she is. It's just not going to have any impact on the movie whatsoever.
Mm. Yeah, well, do we need
she's in her house. It's a four-day week.
Yeah.
It's a four-day week. Four-day dad week.
Chicken the Honda is what she is. Not a chick in the bucket. She's a chick in the Honda.
Yeah.
Chick in the SUV somewhere.
She ended up having a bit of a, what was Niles' wife on?
Maris.
Maris. Yeah,
a little bit of a Maris.
A little Maris. Vera. Vera. Just not going to show her. Never going to be here.
I think we've got a mom around here somewhere is the most prominent when it's about kids and like the kids are of a certain age. Mm-hmm. 'Cause like any kid in this kind of danger would be calling out for their mother. They would be like, you know what I'm saying? Like they would have at least a reference to their mom more often than these kids do.
Yeah. You know? I felt bad. I have to admit, as somebody who's, you know, sometimes you got to be careful about leaving things on certain tables or whatever. When the dad, played by Andy Dufresne over there, Tim Robbins, got the kid knocked over with the ball and he knocked over the drink and it smeared all over his print. I felt that in my loins. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was pissed at Tim Robbins for leaving a big old giant orange drink open, no lid on us. Right. Of course it's going to get knocked over. It's on you, Tim Robbins.
Yeah, it kind of is, actually. The last time I spilled, I did this the other night on a live show. It was on while we were recording Core. I dumped a big thing of water all over a keyboard. And I had no one to blame but myself. You just don't have that shit near your workspace or else you're going to get it. It's going to happen. It's not if, it's when.
For trouble.
Yeah.
I had a glass.
Such a Brady Bunch thing. Oh, Bobby, you ruined Dad's plans, his architectural renderings.
It was a story. You know, it's a way to move the story forward or back.
And I'm asking is why mention it? Like why even invoke mom at the beginning if you're never ever going to?
Well, it's because they're divorced and he's trying to show that the boys are here on a weekend and it's our weekend, but I'm so busy and I got work to do and this is hard and these two won't get along, and I think it added properly to the chaos. You know,
another really good example of this trope that I'm talking about is the 2017 Wonder Woman.
Mm.
Wonder Woman, Diana, what's her last name?
Ross? Prince? No, Prince.
Diana Prince, thank you. It takes place in two time frames, right? But in the current, in the more present time frame, Diana is corresponding with Bruce Wayne. Mm. Like she has like, right, you right. see a photo of them and you're like, oh wow, he's Bruce Wayne is a part of this world and her universe, so on, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. never actually happens in the movie. Yeah, like, right. It's just like a, like, why did you invoke Bruce Wayne, people?
It's their way of saying, don't forget, we're in this cool area where this one guy is and you all love him, right? No, I don't know.
I mean, if you don't, let's face it, if you don't say they have a mom, then you're going to be wondering the whole movie. Is she dead? I would have preferred
that as a viewer.
Not me, because I kept thinking she was dead, and they like explained it, and I could stop thinking about it. I was like, cool, now we know where mom's at, and now we know what Tim Robbins' pressure is. We know why the character is under so much pressure. Mm-hmm. And was it partially his fault? If it's a divorce, yeah. It was, mm-hmm. if she died, then no. So you kind of get a little bit of reading or more facets on Tim Robbins' character.
Yeah, it's all undetailed, but I think you're meant to imply a bunch of stuff about, oh, well, this is a rocky relationship. They didn't see eye to eye. Bought this old house. She got the good house. Like all of that builds some story there where you're...
Gosh, they could have actually made it an older looking, creepier house, couldn't they? Like it was like this old house. Oh. I'm looking around. Wow,
yeah, it looks kind of cool. New, people. Yeah, it looked kind of cool. They had the new floors and it was nice.
Right. Worse than that. I know Tim Robbins draws cars. How much do they pay? Because that place, who could afford that place? Right, I couldn't afford that place.
Solo, and the dumbwaiter, like, and pay child support and pay alimony.
And they even mentioned they had a helper. They just said,
oh, Lupe, Lupe
or something, and went and got some. I was like, what is he doing?
Yeah, that's, and, by the way, the same exact name as the maid in that Seinfeld episode where they're in that hotel in California and he was asking for short cheating versus not short cheating. Her name was also Lupe.
And by the way, the presence of a dumbwaiter does not make a house old.
No, it doesn't.
I watch house inspection TikTok. People are putting freaking dumbwaiters into brand new houses in 2022.
Well, it's because they're being hipster about it.
They're being hip.
Yeah, right. So it's vintage.
Vintage. What is old is new again. But you're right.
There is a disproportionate amount. Right. There is a disproportionate amount of houses in movies that have dumbwaiters as opposed to real life. Yeah, number of dumbwaiters I've seen in the really real world, one.
Yeah.
And have you seen in movies? All the time.
Yeah. All the time. Have you ever seen one of those things that, like, you sit on, it's for people who have mobility issues, they sit on it and then mm-hmm. takes them up the stairs?
Yeah.
I've never seen one of those.
I always
feel like I have, but now that I'm thinking about it, nope. I think I've never seen one except in movies.
I grew up with parents whose best friends, one of them had polio when he was a little kid. Right. And so he was confined to a wheelchair his entire life, and successful accountant. But I was taken over to their house all the time, and they had the lift up the stairs. And I wanted to ride it so
bad. Yeah, dude, that's the thing.
And of course, I was always told, please don't, please don't beg them to ride the thing. Like if they offer for you,
I'm not going to beg. I'm going to do it as soon as they turn.
He's going to run up and commandeer it. So let me ask you this about that, since you've seen one in real life, Randy. Do they have does the wheelchair or whatever that you normally are being moved around in, does that attach to it or is it a separate seat?
No, you have an upstairs wheelchair and downstairs wheelchair.
Okay. No. That, I always confuse
Stop
me.
Touching my upstairs wheelchair.
What's the movie where the lady got flung out of the house from one?
That'd be Gremlins.
Gremlins, that's
loved
right.
It. He also, and it wasn't just any ladies. Was. It was Kiss My Grits.
Right. Oh, was it?
Florence Jean Tackleberry. Yeah.
Shut up. That's
he also had grips all over the house. Everywhere you went, there were these like mounted grips where you could reach out from your chair and grab on and stand
stuff,
up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, that was there. Okay. And the Thura house, let me just say, I don't know what haunted, crazy architect built this place, but they had a light switch for every little light in the whole house. When he was turning the lights off when they were in space. Mm-hmm. He was literally, he flipped like 20 switches upstairs,
right.
And each one of them had one light attached to him. I was like,
yeah,
no
you know
way.
What? And that's another good life lesson. Turn off the lights when you leave a room.
Damn straight. Did you guys
not just love your brother? It's turn off the damn lights.
Yes.
I haven't been that upset since with the doorknob episode.
Oh, the Better Watch Out, the Christmas movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tina made the comment actually about, like, I wonder if they made the doors of this house like a lot shorter, or if Tim Robbins really is that freaking tall.
Yeah. Oh, he's that tall, right?
He's a pretty tall guy.
He's a giant.
Yeah, he's a gigantic dude for Hollywood. He's funny though, because he goes against the grain a little bit. Like when you see Tom Cruise, you think he's taller than he is. He's actually a tiny little guy. You see Jeff Goldblum and you're like, oh, he's so tall compared to everybody else. But I think Goldblum's shorter than Tim Robbins, and Tim Robbins never strikes me as taller than somebody like that. So it's weird.
So I've looked it up several times before. Tim Robbins is 6'5", and the reason I've looked it up is because Clancy Brown is also very tall, but he's 6'3". So Tim Robbins would have kind of towered over Clancy Brown in Shawshank if not if he hadn't made – if they made a lot of efforts to make Clancy Brown look bigger.
They
made Tim Robbins hunch. And sort of like shrink.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was always sitting down or leaning over.
I'm going to be watching that this week because my daughter and I are here while Kim's out of town. And I said, I'm finally making you watch that damn movie. So we're going to see how that went.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to think about how hard it is to get a 6'5" frame through a hole in the wall and out the sewer pipe. That's impressive. Man.
Yeah. I'm also going to watch it soon. I'm getting into watching, you know, the best movies of all time with my kid.
And yeah. It's a good one.
It's still pretty PG-13, you know?
Very but, much. Yeah. Well, I'd say
I'd like to say it's PG-13.
I think
I'd
it's like kind of R still. Isn't it R? I think it's R. I would argue it's still pretty R, but Carter's 25. Maybe I'm not going to watch it. Right.
You're right. There's a pretty bad rape scene.
Okay, yeah. Never mind. Prison rape's no good, but there's a real strong statement, by the way. Everyone marked it down the day you heard Scott say, prison rape's no good.
That's a real hard
way to go out on a limb with that one.
I know. I feel like I really pushed my boundaries today and acknowledged that prison rape is no good.
I want to give the opposite of a trope to this movie. There's something I really liked about Zathura.
I wish I could play this backwards. I don't have a way to do it. All right, go ahead.
The movie only really beats the hell out of the house.
The kids
are in danger. They have to do some heroics. Not enough, in my opinion. The movie really needed the kids to perform more heroic feats. The most heroic thing they do is turn a key. Like it's too bad, but it only beats the hell out of the house. And this movie really easily could have had the kids getting more injured than they did.
Yeah,
that's probably a reason why they didn't want to write the missing teeth kid into the movie, because then you got permanent things you have to explain to the dad. Like,
exactly.
Wow, why all of a sudden do you have 7 teeth missing and you were just playing a board game?
Yeah.
Did anyone else expect when the dad came back finally in the end for him to know about the game, for him to have any idea of Zathura? Like,
right.
Am I the only one who expected there to be like dad?
Oh, yeah, that was sitting in the office or sitting in the basement. Oh, yeah, that old thing.
Yeah, dad, we played Zathura. Like, oh, yeah, I know what happened to you, right? Like, did anybody else expect that?
No.
Hoping for it, but not expecting it.
Didn't expect it.
I couldn't remember either. I was trying to remember. I also had the same feeling that maybe there was like some kind of connective tissue. It's like, oh, yeah, that happened to me when I was a kid. In the book, boy, I mean, this is, you know, I can't believe they veered from the 15-page book with the script, but in the book they actually find the board game under a Jumanji game that they found in the park.
They probably got some rights issues. Some other studio owns the Jumanji rights.
That's way better. I would way rather they find it in a dumpster and bring it home than find it in the home that their dad moved into.
I want to know more about grandma, because they, you know, grandma was cremated. I'm assuming it was grandma's house. This is probably where she kept the games when Tim Robbins was growing up, and they never really, even talked about the grandma any. Yeah. So
they also did very little to explain this weird time travel brother business. Like,
oh, right.
How that all was handled.
The multiverse of Zathura that they kind of touched on for just half a second, but they didn't really go anywhere with.
Right.
It was a letdown. Like it was a serious letdown to me, because like the astronaut, the everything around the astronaut is cool up to that point. And then I'm like, oh, you just sort of erased a lot of you spend the whole movie going, what's this guy doing here? Why is he so invested? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like what? Mm. He's real personable with them. Yeah. Where did he come from?
They either need to give more clues about that to so that it's like, oh, the thing's right in front of me the whole time, or they need to not do it at all. And it really didn't need to be done.
Yeah.
Having him get acquainted with a brother that he lost.
Yeah,
that wasn't the actual brother who was already in the house, would have been just as powerful as as, you know, having it be that kid.
I agree.
Right. Because then you have this like ham-fisted magic moment where people reabsorb their own future.
Yeah. That was kind of cool. It was like weird.
And that was, you know, like, I don't know. It feels like there should have been better ways to do that. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought I put a GIF of it that I made in the thing, but I thought the actual morph effect was pretty good for 05. It's not bad.
It was terrifying.
It was a little too good, terrifying. Like a little too well. Yeah. We've gotten too good at the morph.
The demorphing of him was just too much for me. I didn't care for it.
Yeah. This is the spot where I stop tearing this thing down because it's so much easier to destroy than to build up.
Okay.
This movie has Dax Shepard. And Dax Shepard has no business being this good. There's nothing in Dax Shepard's history before this moment that indicates he's going to be as great as he is at playing this role, presence in there. I loved Dax Shepard in this movie.
I
don't understand how they found him.
When was Baton happening? When was that?
Idiocracy was. Right.
This was hot off the Without a Paddle, and he really stood out in Without a Paddle.
Yes, Idiocracy was his next movie. I looked it up.
Oh, 06, you're right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's
but Without a Paddle was when people really started paying attention to Dax.
I don't remember Shepard. Without a Paddle. Was that
That was with Seth Green and Matthew Lillard. Yeah, fantastic comedy. Kids who have kind of grown up and they've got to, one of their friends dies and they have to go, they're trying to on a spiritual kind of quest thing. Pretty hilarious. And it's on Netflix right now.
Is it?
I really appreciate that Lillard and Shepard had better careereers after that than Seth Green.
Yeah.
Like the star of the movie. Yeah.
I don't know. Seth Green had a different career. He went more into, you know, in production and different
behind
things.
The scenes, the whole robot chicken thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. He's still busy doing crap like that. He still shows up and stuff though.
Do you guys remember Greg the Bunny?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do remember Greg the Bunny.
Show,
yeah.
Fox TV show or something.
Yeah. Was it like a season and a half?
I loved it. I actually had it on like DVD or something at one point.
They must still be pals because Robot Chicken, which is still in production, Dax Shepard was just in this season's episodes of that, so they must be friends still or something.
Yeah.
I always feel like you always see the Seth Green stuff. It's always people he hangs out with or you've seen him in other stuff and whatever. Dax Shepard famously, of course, married to, what's her beak? Veronica Mars.
Kristen Bell.
Yeah, Kristen Bell. Mm-hmm. Lucky guy.
Yeah. He was in Veronica Mars in 2014. Yeah, go ahead.
I loved the show Parenthood. That, you know, going back to Peter Berg, right?
That was a great Peter Berg production, that movie.
Peter Berg production, yeah.
Yeah, he makes good
Speaking of people who have been in FilmSack before, this movie, you're going to be surprised at who has been on FilmSack the most of this crew. Mm. It is not Dax Shepard. Mm. And obviously it's not Josh Hutcherson. We've actually seen Kristen Stewart the most.
Yeah, I was thinking with Panic Room and
Viva Rock Vegas is our other one for her.
We watched Viva Rock Vegas
for FilmSack.
You know, I always say
Pebbles or something. I don't even remember in that.
Yeah. Exactly. Usually we say, oh, I thought we sacked that one. And I'm like, when you said Flintstones, I'm like, yeah, we never sacked that. I don't even remember watching that. Did I see
Viva Rock Vegas?
Viva Rock Vegas. I'm sorry, that's part two, right?
She's also tied with Tim Robbins. We've seen Tim Robbins twice before this in Howard the Duck and in a tiny bit role in Top Gun. Barely counts.
Oh, that's right.
Tim Robbins was
Gun. That new movie, by the way, speaking Maverick. Of Rotten Tomatoes, 97% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Oh, no way, really? Yeah. I don't want it to be good.
It's going
to
be good.
I want to justify it in avoiding it.
I really want to see it. I was a fan. I liked Top Gun growing up. I did too,
and that's why I feel like this is just like, oh, okay, we're going to have a beach volleyball scene, and we're going to have he's the new Tom Skerritt, and it's going to be the same story, just with people moving up.
I do love that he's older than Tom Skerritt was when Tom Skerritt played the director guy. He's like literally older than him now, which is so weird. But
he's supposed to be like the Balboa or whatever. It's kind of like where he's grown up and now he's the teacher kind of thing.
Yeah. He's kind of like the one who knows everything. He comes back to the program. Goose right. has a son who looks just like Goose.
Looks just like him only because of that mustache.
Yeah, but dude, I mean, 97% is hard to fight or hard to argue with. It seems like people are stoked about it. Real quick, here, the other person
we
see all the
think that Goose had that son, by the way. Like
she was pregnant when he died.
Oh, like, that's right.
Conceived after playing the piano in a diner.
Yeah,
yeah. As you know, every California diner has a piano in it, take me home or lose me forever. They went home and conceived a baby.
Yeah, Tony. The only thing I'm sad about with any of this is Tony Scott's not around to direct it, because I think he would have done a great job. But so the biggest the thing about this movie almost everything else we've mentioned today, this David Coop guy writes everyone's scripts. So he wrote this Zathura script. He wrote the thing we just Panic Room. That dude's everywhere. I think we've
so let me give you some others that we've seen on Film Sack. Yeah. He did the screenplay for Crystal Skull.
Okay. Ugh.
He did the screenplay for Mission Impossible. We watched the first Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
And then he did the screenplay for The Shadow, which I think that is very interesting, because we talked a lot about how The Shadow doesn't deliver on what we thought was a perfectly good script.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a decent script, but does not execute well on the script. I agree with that. He wrote Ghost Town, pretty good Ricky Gervais deal. Let's see. He's busy. He's got all kinds of shit going on. He wrote the Lego Jurassic World game. What? Oh, no. No, they just gave him credit.
They had to write that?
Yeah. They gave him credit because he wrote the movie. That's why. Or wrote the Jurassic World screenplay. Yeah.
So I'll tell you one other Film Sack Connections thing that I dug into was the cinematography.
Yeah.
So the director of photography for Zathura is a guy named Guillermo Navarro, and we've seen several Guillermo Navarro films, and I think we loved the cinematography in all of them. It's Four Rooms, it's From Dusk Till Dawn, it's Hellboy 2, Spawn, and The Long Kiss Goodnight. Every one of those movies is connected to this one, to Zathura.
Weird. Oh, original Jurassic Park, also screenplay by this guy. That must have really been the deal for him. 93. He's like, hey, you want me to write your Jurassic Park, do you? Oh, it's one of the biggest films of all time? I probably don't ever have to work again. You can just chill. But no,
I don't ever have to apply again. People come to me now.
Yeah, they come to you, not the other way around. Well done, David. Co-op, and your name is weird. All right. Gross. What do you guys hear? I'm going to play this here. This is our this for this week. This is our gross clip.
You waxed your anus.
All right. What grossed Scott out in this movie? What would you?
Well, you already told us. So I've been trying to think of something else.
I'll tell you what. It was almost a tie. With it slightly going to that radio. So it was there's the disgusting shot of this radio, kind of waterproof bathroom radio. I remember seeing some
that
of these.
Wasn't waterproof. You're not supposed to keep those in the bathroom.
Well, whatever.
But that thing didn't short.
But that's what people do. And so she's in there. Yeah. She's playing her music, which was probably.
It's a little boombox with the CD player on the top. Yeah. Like everybody had one of those.
And this thing had a volume knob or whatever the hell that was that looked like it was caked in death. Ugh. It's horrendous.
Yeah. Someone had touched the volume knob a lot while they were cooking.
Yeah, or something. Like, just never washed it.
It's a bathroom.
All that steamy air in the bathroom. And
I mean, it's a bathroom radio. So it's exactly what you would think. We have a teenage girl. Apparently, it's her bathroom is attached to her bedroom. She's in there doing a hairspray, makeup, all the powder makeup, all the hairspray. It floats in the air. It lands on the equipment. It gets gross and nasty because of all the water. Seen it a million times.
Yep.
I had sisters growing up. Did you guys have sisters?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Nope. Yeah. And they would spend, people who are like, man,
she had nothing.
It's like, she sure spent a long time in that bathroom. Yeah. That's what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I had my own bathroom, I would spend that much time in it.
All three of my sisters felt like days in the bathroom. And when we had to share bathrooms, what a nightmare. It was terrible. Because I'm in and out of there. Pee, brush my teeth, run my hand through my hair. I'm done. My sister go in there, and then 2 hours later come out looking the same.
2 hours later.
Yeah. She was
looking
weird.
The same. Oh, such a burn.
Such a burn.
Burn.
Deep cut, deep burn. Anyway, for me, it's kind of closely tied to when Hutcherson went outside and tried to spit into space. I know that's fake, a little CGI spit and everything, but ew.
Yeah.
Floating spit.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Don't be doing that. Because then, like, it reminds me, if I remember in the International Space Station, and you're talking too much and a little spit bubble comes out, that thing's going to float all over the place. It's freaking disgusting. No gravity up there. So that
where do the
me
farts
out
go?
Right. Where do they go in space?
Probably. Where do broken farts go?
Do you think they spread? Does gas rise in the zero gravity environment? I don't know.
Is zero gravity have anything to do with it? I don't even know. Then,
yeah.
If there's no air,
there's got to be air inside the ship, though. I mean,
well, that's true.
You're talking about if you stuck your butt out the spaceship and farted, what would happen to it?
I just don't know if gravity has any effect on that. So I don't know.
I've turned the page in this episode on tearing down this movie. So I can't. I would like to ask if anyone else had any thoughts about how the hell this house works during its adventure. Like,
how does water keep going? Like, and all that?
Did it not strike you as strange that the water and the gas and so on was?
No, it's just because it was a bit magic.
They open up. Okay, so it's but like, is there like a force field around the people?
There's, I don't know. There is.
Well, there's like a. It's very much Doctor Who TARDIS rules, right? Where you can step out of the house and not need any sort of oxygen. You can open the front door and not need any sort of oxygen. It's like some sort of. The TARDIS creates a force field around the user with oxygen, just like this
house.
Are
you actually in space, or is this like a projection
imagination? Can Dorothy breathe in a tornado? I don't know.
And also, the way that thing was getting pelted.
Staring back to Wizard of Oz. Like, it's perfect.
The way that thing was getting pelted.
Wizard of Oz rules, man.
Yeah, Wizard of Oz rules always win.
Then it was all a dream. Is what you're saying?
No. Well,
potentially,
I mean,
who knows?
If all kids, three kids shared it, it's not a dream. I mean, they all experienced.
Maybe that's still part of the dream.
True.
Maybe. But they all, you know, that's
Freddy and them, they had dreams and Freddy's nightmares. And those were all dreams, but they still remember them.
Yeah, but some of them died.
I think Nightmare on Elm Street's another good comparison here. I think this movie gets a little bit, it gets a little esoteric with the supernatural aspect.
Yeah.
Right. And like,
do you know Frank Oz? Frank Oz played that robot. You know that Frank Oz, a famous Frank Oz. There was the robot man going, "Must kill intruders" or whatever. Right. That was cool.
Yeah. Also, why are the Vogons? Low rent
Zorgons.
Zorgons. Okay, come on. Really. Zorgons, come on.
Oh, you're gonna get some Hitchhiker's Guide fans like really angry if you
what?
If you
be all up your come butt. Up with a come up with a more distinct name then. But like seriously, like you have Vogons established in it. Like a billion people around the world know that name because of how famous Hitchhiker's Guide was.
Yeah, that's anyway, true. Zorgon is, but I think Zorgon fits the 50s pop art thing.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. Right. Why are the aliens in this movie just like poor man's velociraptors?
Yeah, they're just
I didn't get that.
They're lizard men. Yeah.
But they're just like slow.
They need to be something you can't communicate with. And the kids probably thought lizards were scary, so when they went into their old space dust filled stupor when they took this game out of the basement that put them into a trance for 3 hours.
Have you ever seen Sleestaks? They're terrifying.
Yeah.
Of course.
I just want to thank you, Brian Ibbett, for giving me like a piece. That's a piece of apologia that I can really work with.
Right. There was some like, you know, heroin dust in the game itself.
Instead of the Vogons being something that comes in and is already established from the outside and comes in, you're saying maybe make that something that the kids invented for themselves.
Right,
that helps me a lot because, like, I spent a lot of the movie going, how do these people operate spaceships?
I'm here for you to help you with this.
Thank you.
This sort of thing.
You know what's crazy? This cast is only six human beings. This probably saves a lot of money, by the way.
It's very light.
So six human beings are involved. The rest of them, well, they're not that they're not humans, but the rest are stunt people who are playing these Zorgons. So you got the robot. Right. So one of them's a robot, this John Alexander guy, Frank Oz doing the voice. I'll count him as an actor. So he's the sixth. But then you got this Derek Mears, Douglas Tate, Joe Buckaroo or Bukaroo or whatever his name is, and Jeff Wolf. These are all Zorgon people. That's your movie. So they probably, because I did want to mention this and we haven't really talked about it. I think that the combination of digital and practical effects in this movie are really, really good. And especially the house destruction interior stuff where things are just getting wrecked. I think that stuff is viscerally rad. It doesn't strike me as, you know, overly fake I know there were times like the meteors were definitely digitally enhanced, but still they definitely
visually
wrecked
everything
up a place.
This movie holds up and is going to continue to hold up.
I agree. That stuff looked really nice. Even some of the green screen, more obvious things like the kids getting sucked into the hole and junk like that was fine. You know, it would hold up.
It was so fast and small and just, Yeah. You're not going to.
Whereas Jumanji, I knew everything was made out of freaking computer parts. Like, it was just too, it's hard. You know what I mean? Like, the elephants running through town. It's like, well, those are some cartoon ass looking Pixar elephants. Well done, everybody.
Movie ends. And my kid goes, well, that was like a really cheap movie. And I'm like, no.
It was expensive.
But, and he's like, he was like treating it and like literally saying they, you know, that was like shoestring budget for that movie. I'm like, no. This movie cost $65 million.
Yeah, it's a lot. Make. It's a lot of money.
And I mean, sure, some of it goes to an unnecessarily expensive song at the end or something. Yeah,
I wondered about that. You're so funny you brought that up, because as soon as that played, I went, oh, that's got to be like a huge chunk of their budget, and it's just for the credits.
Yeah.
What a bummer. What was the song?
I don't understand that part.
I was kind of sad they didn't have Blur in there. I would have really enjoyed it.
Woohoo!
But awesome practical effects cost money.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And take time.
Hell
this,
yeah.
This movie probably took weeks and weeks, like for each of these shots where parts of the set are getting destroyed in a perfect way.
Well, it took 7 baby teeth for the thing to get made. That's a long time.
How much the Tooth Fairy paid for that?
It says here, it doesn't say how long they took to shoot. Even though the movie took, I'm guessing 3 months, probably a 90-day shoot or something like that.
Well,
but yeah.
Like I said, it cost $65 million and it grossed $30 million in the United States and Canada, which is a huge letdown for people making a movie. But like I say, I don't think audiences are flock to something based on they heard that it's got great practical effects.
No,
that's too bad.
The same thing happened in 99 to the Iron Giant, which everyone and their dog considers to be one of the greatest animated films ever made. But no one saw it. It tanked in theaters, and it made up for that in aftermarket DVD and so on. But in those days, it was like a real bummer, because you were like, man, this is an amazing movie, but no one's seeing it. Because why? Well, it's not Disney. Okay, well, we don't recognize the studio, and it's about a giant robot. What is this? Like, nobody cared. And now look at it. So I'm not saying this is the same as that, but I think Zathura has a longer tail than maybe some people thought it would have.
I'll bet you Brad Bird has 7 houses. Like, he really capitalized on that, forward.
Yeah, he did now, but sure. Well, I mean, I think Brad Bird did fine even after Family Dog. He was doing good. That guy's, he was bound for greatness. There was no getting around it. And then his Pixar stuff made that permanent, I guess. But anyway, do you see that fat early aughts iPod she had in bed when she was trying to ignore her dad?
Yep.
Because this is a sad week to see that.
I know, it is a sad week because they officially retired it this week. It's gone,
right?
And I guess up till now they were only selling the iPhone like iPod touches. Yeah.
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 So it's been a while since you could get a proper iPod, or you know what we consider to be an iPod. But
can I have a trope alert?
Yeah, you can have a trope alert right here.
Yeah, you can have one. Slow down.
There's some crazy shit going down, and somebody wearing headphones turns up their music so they can hear it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that trope.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I freaking love that trope. I desperately love that trope. And this movie took it to its fullest extent. She actually stops listening to the music. She gets up and goes to the bathroom and turns on the shower, which obscures her from hearing what's going on.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes, yes. Everything about that. Like,
it's a great metaphor for teenage years in general. You know, they just block everything else out. They only have what they're interested in. And that's just, you know, it's perfect for a girl her
age. Oh, I love that trope so much.
Yeah, it was really good. All right. I have a bunch of clips here from the film Zathura. Would you like to hear some of these clips?
Oh, my God. Sure. Yes.
Oh, good. Because here's one of the little.
You better play some clips.
Here's a kid playing, saying dick. Okay. So that's cool. Here you go. Joy.
You're such a dick.
Ooh, he really rips it, too. Oh,
really? Yeah.
You're such a dick.
And he is a dick. Hutcherson
is a dick.
Older brother. He's bullshit. Oh, he sucked.
He's that older brother from the Wonder Years. I can't remember the kid's name, but that's
exactly what
I thought of with this older
he
brother
plays
dynamic.
That well,
oh yeah, that's true. I haven't seen that in so long. Is that new one supposed to be good?
Wayne, was that his name?
Yeah, Wayne. You nailed it. I believe it's Wayne. I think
that show's supposed to be pretty good. The new.
Yeah, the new one's supposed to be really good.
I guess Fred Savage is
the one they just fired. Fred Savage.
Yeah, they fired
for being inappropriate.
Yeah, what was he doing, Fred? What are you doing?
Oh, jeez.
Should have bought that script from Kramer when he saw you in that coffee shop and everything.
We won't know what he actually did until Cyril from Breaking Bad Breaking Away narrates it for us and tells us.
Yeah, we'll never know until then. I can't wait.
I, right. I do really enjoy that the six-year-old became like advanced in his ball throwing skills so much at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like he somehow put in 100 hours of practice in the last day of the movie.
Trust from your older brother makes everything better. That's the deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's 2 inches of space. Okay.
Give me about 2 inches of space. Will you please?
2 inches. Jeez.
2 inches of space.
Okay. All right. I'd want more than that. But
it's a foreshadowing right there.
A little bit, yeah. You're going to get about 400 yards of space here soon. here's some time to grow up.
I'm in fourth grade. I have a girlfriend. You know how dads, we have to grow up? Well, this is what it looks like.
This is what it looks like.
That was like one of my favorite lines.
So now he's 10? I guess I...
He's always 10.
Okay.
I'm in fourth grade. I guess I have a girlfriend.
Yeah, it's girlfriends at 10 seem...
Yeah.
A little early, but whatever.
My sixth grader was appalled, by the way, that he had a girlfriend in fourth grade. No fourth graders have a girlfriend. Yeah,
pretty rare. Although I got married. I got married in sixth grade. There was this girl named Amy, I think.
Did you consummate it by sharing?
You don't even remember your... Right, you don't even remember your first girlfriend's name?
So jeez, here, man. This is literally how it went. I think the whole thing started on the bus. And then by the time I got to school, we had somebody picked out who was going to perform the fake marriage. They performed this fake marriage. I don't remember. I think someone all volunteered or some idiot kid volunteered. So then they performed this.
Tell me where you got your fake license. Hold on.
Right.
So they performed this fake marriage in the hallway. And by the end of that thing, the consummation was we had to hold hands and walk around holding hands.
That's sweet.
That's really sweet.
It didn't last long. I hate to say it. We had to get a fake divorce.
Does Kim know? Right.
Fake divorce, fake child custody.
Had to go visit the fake lawyer.
Yeah, fake lawyer. It was awful. All right, here's Tim Robbins. Oh, I am Tim Robbins as dad, I wrote here. I don't know what that means. Here we go.
It's not like it means anything.
Hope it doesn't.
It doesn't. It's just an expression.
Hope it is.
It is.
That's something I would have totally done.
Yeah,
I would have stood there way longer than I'm supposed to, saying that over and over. That's exactly how I handled that.
I wanted more of that from this movie.
Yeah, it was good. Why that stuff was good.
More of, like in Elf, all of those funny, distorted parent spots are between Will Ferrell and his dad, Walter. What's his name?
Guy from Things.
Anyway, there's like lots of
Con,
it
in Robert Elf. Richard Con Robert
James Con.
There you go.
and then there's an actual kid who plays his actual son, and it's like you get a lot of it. You don't just get one quick little bit, but you develop that. Oh, these people have a bad relationship. Dad is being dad, like over several different scenes, not just this one quick little thing.
Yeah, I was also convinced after that scene that. That's her natural state. Kristen Stewart is very good at being an irritated, half asleep teenager. Mm-hmm. I think that's her zone. She's really good there.
She's like 32 years old now. I hope that we get to see her as like an adult in an adult role.
Well, she's got that. She got that Princess Di thing. Supposed to be real good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I hope that I'm just saying, I hope we come to see her.
Oh,
like
I see what you're
you
saying.
You know what I'm saying? As opposed to, she just feels so totally frozen.
She had a
Hunger Games.
The fappening was rough on her. She had a, she was a very big target.
Oh,
on that.
Really?
Yeah. Forgot about that. But
that's interesting that's top of mind for you.
I just remember there were a few people that really got muddied on that, and it felt like her was one of them. I can't remember for sure, but I think it was her. All right. Here's a get out of my face kind of deal.
Do me a favor. Go downstairs and stay out of my face.
All right. Some teenage sister business.
Get out of my face.
Do me that favor, that one
it's
favor.
It's the same thing that Dad just said, right?
Yeah. 2 inches of space, get out of my face.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, this is a great...
Like the Dr. Seuss family is what they are.
This is a great part of the movie where the brothers are trying to convince the sister something weird's going on, and I love how excited they got about the card, so listen to this.
Yeah. Oh, card! Oh, here comes a card!
Yeah, they're so into it, dude.
I didn't realize you were going to play the clip. I thought you were just describing the scene, so
sorry. Yeah, it's really good. Here, I'll play it again.
I did love that scene.
The card, oh, thank God.
And then this was a fun moment.
Give me a juice box, biatch.
Biatch. Biatch. Yeah. That's pretty good. This right here was very relatable. This sounded like every conversation I ever had with my siblings, somebody was always doing this. So here, I'll play it.
What are you doing?
Making mac and cheese.
That was my life growing up. Somebody was making mac and cheese every minute of the day, it felt like, in our house. Either that or what we called Korean soup, which was just the cheap ramen that you would cook on the microwave.
One of the things between my wife and I that is like a moment for me is when I go to Canada and find out, wow, they like mac and cheese up there, because I grew up in South Texas. It just wasn't a thing. Mac and cheese was just not a thing. Did not have mac and cheese.
Yeah. That's South Carolina. That's all we eat. Mac and cheese. Yeah. I'm eating it right now.
It's like the national food stuff of Canada. And like, so I always notice it anyway. That's what I'm saying. Like when he said he's making mac and cheese, I'm like, oh, interesting.
I thought everybody in the United States had mac and cheese. Listeners, send us the tweets and emails. I want to see who's I thought that was universal.
I did too. Maybe it's less ubiquitous.
I grew up in a family that was not participating in that. Like it was South Texas. Like we ate a lot of ceviche. You probably didn't eat that.
Did not.
Mac and ceviche, though. That's the stuff.
Gosh dang it. You know what I liked? We did this. We'd put a little extra. We put a ton of butter in it for some reason. It made it just real slimy. And then we would put a can of, bad chili in it. And then you just have chili mac all night. And it was the greatest thing in the world because don't care.
Did you cut hot dog weenies up in it?
Sometimes.
Mm, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that redundant? Hot dog weenies? That's like saying a hot dog has a weenie. Is that what you're saying? It's like a separate
hot dog
thing.
Yeah. It's like a little hot dog stuck on the end of a hot dog.
In case you didn't know.
By the way, I have learned how to make mac and cheese. Like I have studied it. I have come up with all sorts of things to add to it.
Yeah.
You know, they put the instructions on the box.
Is that the study? It's a great way to sneak a bunch of veggies into your kid's diet. I know that,
What?
What
are you doing to mac and cheese?
You know what we did? We gave maybe Randy's doing this. We used to give our kids broccoli. Cooked broccoli would be in mac and cheese sometimes, and it was really good. And they would eat it, but they would never eat it without it. So
why are you guys trying to ruin mac and cheese for me?
And look, it's for our kids. You can eat it however you want, man. Just go dip your wiener.
It doesn't have to have veggies.
No. I didn't say it had to. I said, but it's a great way to sneak some veggies in.
Yeah. Yeah, you can sneak it in.
Salsa. Would you like some ice cream and kale? Ruining everybody's life.
That doesn't sound very good at all. Ice cream and kale. Ugh. Or kale flavored ice cream.
Somebody's making it. There's mac and cheese flavored ice cream. Speaking like bringing it back.
Oh yes, there is.
We were going to try that on the show, but we couldn't find it.
We are. Yeah, there's a. Yeah, it's like some brand new ice cream place or popular ice cream place that's making it.
We gotta get our hands.
I have had corn and cheese ice cream many, many times. It does not surprise me.
Corn and cheese? That sounds horrendous. What is that?
And we've talked about it on FilmSack before.
I don't remember that. Gross. Maybe I blocked it out. It's so foul. All right. Here's the something spun. Oh, who spun me?
Which one of you spun me?
Which one of you spun me?
Which one of you spun me?
I don't like that term.
What if two people play Zathura at the same, two different sets of kids in two different houses play it at the same time? Where does the astronaut go?
Yeah.
I was curious. Is there only one Zathura? Is there only one Jumanji? Was it some kind of,
maybe.
If there are multiples, then is Dax Shepard got a big equal in every single case? Or is he the one for all of them? Like, come on now.
Wow. Yeah.
And if we're meat, who's meat?
Dude.
Yeah, I love that.
You're meat.
You're meat.
We're meat.
Here's Dax Shepard. This almost made my gross moment because it's audio, but here's Dax Shepard eating too much and right next to a microphone. So enjoy this. This goes for a bit. So continue.
That is uncomfortable.
Yeah. Why Shepard is he ASMR? Hungry?
Why is he hungry? Why does he eat?
That goes on for 16 seconds.
Why does he eat?
Like, why... He's a hungry astronaut.
I don't understand the question.
He's a spirit, though, right?
He's got to create some conflict between the kids. And
why does he eat? He's a hungry astronaut. That's an amazing answer to that question. Right. That's so good.
There.
Oh, man. I think the idea is he's out there forever. He made illusions that he's drinking food out of a tube or whatever.
He's eating foods out of a tube. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe, if, I don't know. I don't know. What
and if he doesn't, then it just feels like, oh, there's no consequences. He's not a real person. No big deal.
It feels the whole movie that there's no consequences. Yeah. There's no, like,
yeah, I don't, that's what? The idea. It's a game. It's imagination. Imagination. It's like playing a game out in the yard. If you shoot somebody with a fake gun, they don't die in real life. They just die in the pretend thing.
I agree. The consequences here are supposed to be, and I think it actually still works for me, but the consequences are supposed to be these brothers need to know, they need to have each other's backs. Like, that's right. The whole thing. So everything else is inconsequential other than that. It all serves that. If you think of it that way, I think it works better. If you think of it as like, whoa, were they ever really in danger? Were any of those meteorites going to actually go through one of the kids' heads? No, never.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you find that out really early. As soon as the supernatural stuff starts, you find out, oh, they're not in actual danger.
Yeah.
So I just, there's just things like where we're taking a bunch of time to watch Dax Shepard eat. And it's like, but you could have developed the dad or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Develop the dad. Mm-hmm. I actually really liked seeing Tim Robbins just do a thing. Been a bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like him. I know he's got some nutty stuff in real life. I don't care, but his movie personas always make me happy. I'm always happy to see him.
What's his nutty stuff? Is he a Scientologist?
No, he's him and who's his ex-wife now? Sarandon. Yeah.
Susan Sarandon.
Yeah. They were just famous for just like being way like, look, take it from someone who's very center of the road politically. Those guys would go pretty lefty pretty hard. In ways that were a little too much.
I remember they were big Green Party supporters.
Yeah, they were hardcore about Jill Stein and all that and whatever. They're just whoever they are. But when I see him in a movie, I don't know. There's some visceral comfort food about him for me. Even when he plays somebody, what was the Eastwood movie where he was a molester or something? River?
Simple Truth or something.
Wet River or Dirty River or River.
Mystic River.
Yep. I like Wet River better.
A wet river runs through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that thing was packed with all these great actors, but I just thought he put an amazing performance forward in that. He's just great. And I'm going to watch him again soon as Andy Dufresne.
Wet River.
Yeah. Speaking of red. All right, here's a time sphincter thing, so I'm going to play that. So you knew that was coming. Here you go.
I've passed through a time sphincter to get here.
I'll pass through a time. Like, this is a time sphincter. Is that just Malibu? Like, is that California? Feels like it's just a California accent.
Baiting.
Hold on. What is Dax Shepard? Dax Shepard is
what is he?
Michigan. He's from freaking Michigan.
Where?
Michigan.
Which city? Which fine city in Michigan? Do you know?
A suburb of Detroit.
Okay. All right. 8 Mile, baby.
How is Dax Shepard formed?
How does one make a Dax Shepard? Why is Dax Shepard marry up so high when he's such a dope? All right. Here's something about... this I played at the top of the show.
It's just a card, Bugnuts.
Bugnuts.
Bugnuts kills me.
It's great.
Favorite.
Yeah. It's great. Was he calling himself Bugnuts then? Yes.
Yeah, because you might call yourself your younger self Bugnuts. I mean,
that's true. Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And then I wrote, been here before. Here we go.
Hey, slow down.
Yes, you are a baby.
I'm not a baby.
You're a baby.
Everybody is a baby.
Oh, I'm not a baby.
You're a baby.
Dude. If you've ever had a moment like that with your, it's usually because we were out at a dollar store and my kids can't decide what the F to get. Yeah. And they were little. They would have these kind of meltdowns. Oh, man.
Why we,
yeah, we
only
call that,
had one.
I know. Right. I was going to say.
Same. Big same.
Yeah. If you got you'll never know.
We call that using your Walmart voice around the house. I'm like, why is everybody slow down now while we're using our Walmart voices?
That's amazing. I've never heard that before, and I will never forget it.
Such a great description.
Yeah. And just for fair play, this again.
Free love.
Free robot love.
Thank you.
All right. It is. We've gone this far. It's time for this now. It's the Film Sack checklist. Better than the old Jumanji? Check. I really believe that. Kristen Stewart's performance is a little cold.
Wooden cold.
She actually is really good in this. That was almost the last time they saw Andy Dufresne. Check. connections in Star Trek land. What do we got, Randy?
We got one. I actually want to do two though.
Okay.
Make one up. So we're gonna get the actor out of the way first. This is barely a connection. It's Douglas Tate, who was inside the Zorgon suit. Also likes to be inside alien suits, I guess, because in Picard, he got a role as a Tellarite. In Star Trek, the 2009 Star Trek film, he has a credit as the character Longface Bar Alien.
Ooh.
That is a great credit. Can you,
great name, man.
Longfaced Bar Alien.
I would tell people.
That reminds me of the one in Quark's Bar.
Morn.
Morn, where they'd say Morn, because it was like a Norn joke.
Yep.
I also want to call out John Debney. John Debney is the conductor who the music composer who was responsible for the incredible Elf soundtrack. So, of course, you can see why this film production company wants to work with John Debney again for this movie. He also was responsible for some of the episodes of The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. He did music for those shows.
Awesome. Which brings us to our soundtrack grade. I'm going to give it a P for perfect for this. I think the soundtrack is very good. For what this is meant to be, it's a big, loud, crescendo-y kind of deal, and it fits.
Yeah. It's bombastic when it needs to be. It's mostly whimsical, and that's exactly what you want. Like I say, he's best known for Elf. You gotta have that whimsy where it goes, and this movie's full of it.
Is he best known for Elf now? Is that still the thing he's best known for?
Oh my gosh. John Debney? Yeah.
Is it?
Oh, absolutely. John Debney. Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, definitely not
Favreau.
Favreau. No. Okay. He's best known as Monica's boyfriend on a season of Friends.
Yeah, that's right.
MMA fighter.
Wannabe.
Such a weird role for him.
Yeah. Another, Debney has continued to do work. Like he did, music for Iron Man 2 and The Greatest Showman. He was not the main composer for Greatest Showman. There was someone else.
Yeah.
But
works with Favreau a lot though. Looks like.
Yeah.
Lots of Favreau work because.
Directors like to have the guy locked in, to know what their movie's gonna sound like in advance.
Yeah.
What's this Rangers of the New Republic he's working on? It's a new Star Wars thing, but I don't know what that is. It says
John Favreau. They've turned the entire company over to John Favreau.
Yeah, he's in charge of whatever. But it claims here he's going to direct two of the initial episodes of a series that Disney Plus is doing called Rangers of the New Republic, and I have no idea what this is. I thought I'd heard of it.
It's animated, right? It's animated.
Is it? Disney Plus series set in the timeline of The Mandalorian. It doesn't say if it's live action or not. I don't know. Weird. I mean, they got a lot of other shit coming, like the Lando sideshow or Lando side series. Sideshow. Sideshow Lando. Anyway, I'm just curious about that. Let's see. Let's move on to this here Twitter post. This is where you guys sum up this movie, Zathura, in 280 characters or less. That's the character economy you have to work within. And we're going to start this week with Randy.
Zathura, several dudes and exactly one female are in a house and they never leave the house. But the one female is the most frigid woman who ever existed. Just like a Saturday Night at Ibiza.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Also, Brian Dunaway, it's your turn.
Zathura, a space adventure. Shipmate Randy goes into cryonic sleep for 5 terms. We should never have rented 13. Never.
She was in her own panic room. All right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Moving on to Brian Ibbett.
Interesting.
Yeah, I've got two of them. My longer one is this one, Zathura. Look, I know it's really easy to compare this to that other board game movie, but it's just so hard not to do, so I'm just going to say it. Zathura is basically Clue in space.
Oh. Yeah, that's interesting.
That is interesting. That's fascinating.
And then here's my other one. Zathura, the card says moops, bug nuts.
It says moops.
Moops.
All these great Seinfeld references today. I love it.
Yep.
All right, well done. It's time for the alternate titles. They were just handed to me. This movie was almost called The Money Pit 2. For some reason, I kept getting Money Pit vibes out of this house.
Because the house keeps getting destroyed in all these horrible ways.
Yeah. I kept thinking, that's so expensive what you just did.
You're not going to be able to come back from this.
Yeah. And that robot just wrecking through doorways.
I forgot this movie has a robot.
Yeah, no, it's...
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we talked about him earlier.
Frank, is it better now? Is it like, do you like it better now, Randy?
Who's the robot?
Frank Oz.
No. I mean, in the supernatural story of the movie.
Oh.
What is the robot like? Oh my gosh.
It's the other brother.
Oh no.
It's just like a unnecessary attachment in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's you're not wrong, but it's also a great way to like think you're done with a thing. And then that plot element comes back to life.
I loved the Deus Ex Machina of the robot showing up when they were about to die and saving them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Reprogram.
Yeah. I was reprogram. He was in there going bzz, 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 to himself the whole time.
Yeah,
that the sub robot, the mechanic robot inside the robot,
inside it. Yeah, the one that actually did all the communicating. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. The other title, by the way, was almost Dax How the Football Fumbles. All right, moving on to your emails. This is a chance for us to read emails from listeners who sent these messages to filmsack@gmail.com. We start with Peter from Iowa, who says, "Hey, filmsackers. I enjoyed the discussion on heavy metal and was interested to hear that you weren't very impressed with the bird in that last story. I think the design of it carries through some from bird characters that Mobius likes to draw."
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Almost said Morbius, but I didn't. I held back.
thank you.
A few years ago, I really got into reading the Incal? I-N-C-A-L. It's not Incel. That's a whole different thing.
Incal.
Anyway, which is a cyberpunk slash space opera series of graphic novels written by Jorodowski and drawn by Mobius. And one of the main characters is a concrete seagull named Depo. Looks very similar to Tarana's bird. In heavy metal. Incidentally, Taika Waititi is reportedly involved in making an adaptation of the Incal, or whatever it's called, and I'm excited. Keep up the sacking. Peter from Iowa. I mean, yeah, probably, but it doesn't mean... Sometimes things look great on the page. I would give you, like, you know, Captain America's stupid little wings on his head. You see those in comics, and there's a classicness to it, and you're like, yeah, these are cool, or the big yellow-brown suit that Wolverine wears in the comics. But none of that translates to film. It just looks bad in motion. So I would argue they could have probably tweaked that bird and made it look better. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Right. And not only that, I think is just a combination of the bird look. It looks like a plucked turkey, right? It looks like it's getting ready to go in for, you know, Thanksgiving. Yeah. But the thing that got me that made it just 10 times worse was the constant crying of the bird that.
It was really bad.
But with all that being said, I was highly amused with it, and so I get to appreciate it regardless.
Yeah,
and it's one of those things that we talk about all the time. Like you have to just park your brain. Like you have to realize this is 40 years old.
Yep.
You probably wouldn't have even noticed that it was weird if you'd seen it 40 years ago.
No, you'd have been fine with it. Today we have higher standards, and it reminds me of this when that thing cried. It's not quite the same, but right away that. Here's one from Dan. Dan says, "Hello, Scott, Brian, and Brian." Or no, sorry, Scott, Randy, and Brian's is what he said it.
All right, fine.
Says, "I just finished your heavy metal episode, and I'm sure I'm the millionth person weighing in on why it's so much easier to flip a record and continue listening, while flipping a laser disc seems like an effort and an affront to the baby Jesus."
You're literally the first person to weigh in on this.
Yeah, you are. Well, we get a bunch of other stuff, but
this is the first moment I've thought about it in a week.
Says most songs have had hard endings, or at least fade into silence. I feel like many artists put those songs' endings into consideration when they make an album, and they'll sequence tracks according to provide a more natural break between one side and the other. Flipping a record after the last song ends is more akin to putting a bookmark in between book chapters and feels less jarring of an interruption. Movies, on the other hand, are supposed to be consumed in a single one-hour sitting or two-hour sitting, and any breaking in that setting seems to be more unnatural to the flow of the narrative, unless there's an explicit fade to black and intermission. So maybe Avengers Endgame and Shawshank shouldn't or should have included a fade to black with an old-timey intermission card halfway through, allowing perfectionists to flip the big silver movie record over. Just my two cents. Right. Team Dunaway all the way, any day, every day. Thanks for all the laughs and keep on sacking, Dan.
Wow.
Right on.
Fanboy. Yeah.
Yeah, you got Get a little admirer out there.
A kindred soul.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we just have it so easy now, right? Like, I mean, Book of Boba Fett's like a 6-hour long movie. And by the way, it's a 6-hour long movie with 5 intermissions. You have to keep hearing the, you know, you have to keep hitting skip intro if you're going to binge it, right?
Yep.
Like it's, that's a problem. I don't know. I've been wondering if we're going to see a subscription level on things like Netflix where you pay an extra buck or two and it will run the episodes all together without the credits and the intros.
Oh yeah. Right.
Isn't that interesting? An interesting idea. Cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, I don't know if I'm just alone in this, but I never skip intro in anything. I always watch intro. I watch the
theme and stuff the first time through. And then for the most part, I do skip intro. Peacemaker, I never skip the intro. Yeah.
But that's what we're talking about, Brian. We're talking about when you're lazy, like the Laserdisc example is an example of this makes me feel something that I have to get up and go do a thing. And like if you're watching, again, I don't know why Book of Boba Fett's my example, but it's got a perfectly fine intro. It's relatively short. Severance is a better one. Severance is, if you want to binge watch Severance, you're going to get interrupted by the intro. Like it's going to stop it's going to stop your process of watching, right?
Yeah. It's very cool though. It's a good intro.
It is.
I had a hard time not watching it. The other one I really like is the season 2 C intro. Season 1 intro is interesting because it plays on the whole blindness thing, but that second season has this amazing music by
Wolf.
The BSG guy. Can't remember his name.
Bear McCreary.
Yeah. Amazing soundtrack, especially that opener. It's so good. And this really great animated thing. And I do not skip it. I can't skip it. I have to watch it every time. And that's unusual for me. I'm usually like after one or two of these viewings, I'm like, all right, I can skip that. Not that one. It is badass. Okay. Well, Dan, you're awesome. And so is dude from Iowa. Where is his name? Peter. Thank you both for your emails. Send them to filmsack@gmail.com. Our next movie will be, I didn't write it down. What was it?
We're going to watch Battleship next week.
That's right. Battleship.
That's right.
Board game movie, right?
No. No. Spoiler alert. No.
No. Has anyone else not seen it? Because I've never seen it.
I've never seen it. Okay. I don't think I've never seen it.
Great. I have seen it. This is a 2012 film by Peter Berg. It is marred by its own name. It should have been called something else and you might have different feelings.
I mean, they basically got the rights to some weird board games and some people said, hey, what if we made a whole movie around them? And I don't know that it's that crazy, except Battleship is literally just try to guess where the dude's boat is.
If they don't have at least one guy going, I can't find where he's at, we'll just take a random shot. Here it comes. We sunk his battleship. If we don't have that, forget it.
Ooh, I would like more of that.
Battleship. There's got to be that in there, right? Don't they?
I would like more predictions from those of you who haven't seen it. Like that, because it's like I say, it's the name that gets in the way.
The thinnest of thread that holds it together, right?
Yeah. I wonder if we'll ever get a Connect Four.
Pretty sneaky, sis.
Yeah, that has to be the whole movie.
It's a romantic comedy, right? Yeah. So that would be,
It just needs to be the story of that dude and his sister, you know, like just expand that out, because who cares about the effing game? But whenever they do thing like this, like
it's a holiday movie and they've returned home and their new spouses can't understand their rivalry.
Ding.
Right. Yep. And then it's all wrapped around. It's coming to the Hallmark Channel. Connect Four.
Yep.
Check it out.
Yep. Check it out. Come and see.
I would like to see Jon Favreau make a movie called Chutes and Ladders.
Yeah. Mm. I'd watch that. Or Life. It'd be about the cereal and the board game. Both of those. Sure. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Trouble. Sorry. Sorry.
Do Sorry and Trouble in the same. It's a double feature. Oh, man.
Right.
Well, anyway, that's Battleship next week. Currently streaming on what?
I have it. It's on Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime. Okay. I've come to the conclusion that all good movies that are streaming that are like older or just mid-range time or whatever, they're all streaming everywhere except Netflix these days. Mm-hmm. So something flipped, man. And I know what it was. They threw all their money at creating their own stuff and they stopped caring about getting good pickups. And now everyone else has them. I'm not sure that was the best plan for them.
Are you sure? They're watching 2012's Battleship, right?
Yeah.
It's on Netflix.
Oh,
now.
It is Netflix.
So I don't even see it on Prime.
So I'm giving Netflix all this shit, but really the movie we're going to watch is on Netflix. So check it out. Netflix next week. Right here on FilmSack. In the meantime, FilmSack.com is our website. FilmSack@gmail.com is the place you email us at. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, well, you can do that too, @FilmSack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
3-Day Dad Week.
We'll see you next time. 3-Day Dad Week.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Give me a juice box, biatch.
Yeah.